Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Around the world, the trip begins with Ken. Roam if you want to, roam around the world. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a great weekend in June, wherever you happen to be. We are actually at, get your maps out, boys and girls, 38 degrees, 53 minutes north, 77 degrees, 2 minutes west. We are in Washington, D.C., coming to you from the Washington Hilton, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. If you're just joining us in our last hour, we were talking with the top chef himself, Tom Colicchio, of course, the owner of Kraft Restaurant, but of course, September, October, November, December, any month you want to look at, but especially this month, you'll see Top Chef starting at season 7 from Washington, D.C. on June 16th, just right around the corner. And Tom is still with us. Hey, Tom.
Hey, how you doing? You know, Peter, I remember the restaurant during the break. It's Vidalia. That's where I did
That's where you had the 21-course tasting menu?
Yes. And
you lived
every
to tell
21 course were great.
And you lived... Okay, I got to ask it. 21 courses, did you have a favorite?
Oh, God.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm sure I did. Right now, it'd be tough. It is all really, really wonderful.
Well, when we last left off, we were really talking about a very serious subject about about battling childhood obesity, and you said it's really not about the food, it's about what?
Well, it's a symptom of poverty, and people think it's overeating or lifestyle. What happens is, you know, when food stamps run out, parents are forced, feed their kids up on, sugary sodas and fast food and food that has very, very little nutritional value. Literally just noodles with nothing on them. And so a lot of these kids are becoming obese because they're overeating, but they're getting undernourished. And, it's a huge problem, but it is a part and parcel of poverty. In fact, new numbers are out that there are 45 million Americans that are what they call food insecure, which means during the course of the month they'll go hungry. That includes 17 million children. And so the numbers are staggering when you look at it, and you think about this country and all that we have, and that we allow 45 million people, that's 1 in 8. It's just not right. And obesity is part and parcel, flip side of that problem.
And when you travel around the country like I do, if you go off the beaten path, so to speak, if you get out of the downtown area, you see it.
Well, you see it, and what you really see are what they call food deserts, and this happens both in rural areas and in the inner cities, where you can't find fresh food. You can't find fresh vegetables. You may have your local neighborhood bodega. All they have is processed shelves, and so good luck finding an apple, or a piece of fruit in either the rural areas in this country and the inner cities.
I remember a time not too long ago, Tom, that I was in a high school in Tennessee and another high school in Virginia. And in the middle of the day, they rang a bell. And I said, what's the bell? And they said, it's donut time. And I said, what? And a cart came down the hall, and it was the sugar rush for all the kids, and that was their lunch.
Horrible. Horrible. I mean, a lot of people think the same way. There's a book out recently by Helen Popovich called Free for All, and she advocates, as well as a lot of people, that lunch should be free for everybody in school. There's three tiers of a lunchroom right now. There's free for those who qualify, and then there's a reduced lunch, and then there's a full price, and all three are subsidized by the government. But the problem is that it's not funded properly, and the food is terrible. It's over-processed foods, and what happens is lunch programs start to mimic fast food. That's what kids want, and it's easy. They can buy frozen stuff, throw it in the oven, and put it in a steam table, and that's it. So you don't need skilled workers to cook anymore. Firsthand, my mother actually ran a school lunch program in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and she fed 3,000 kids a day.
Does the word Velveeta ring a bell?
Pardon?
I said, does the word Velveeta ring a bell?
Velveeta,
no. No, no. I'm talking about Velveeta, the cheese.
Oh, Velveeta. Yeah, it's, that would, you know, it's worse than that. It's a lot worse than that. And but, you know, school lunches, we can take care of the majority of hungry children if lunches were free. You know, also kids that often they have to stand in another line. And they don't want that. You know, 40% of the kids who qualify for free lunch won't get it because they're embarrassed by it. They're stigmatized by it. And so that's why if all school lunch is free and it's a balanced meal, it would work. You know, right now schools, they have what they call the a la carte option, and it's a lot of stuff from vending machines and candy and stuff. And they do this because that's the only way they can actually break even, is to sell some items where they actually make some money.
They're knowingly selling, for lack of a better word, crap.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Wow.
It's rotting out kids' teeth, and again, they're filling up on soda and sugar and high fructose corn. That's in everything, and they're not getting nutrition, and that's why they're becoming obese. And that, and the fact that all PE, you know, PE is cut from a lot of the, you know, high schools these days because there's you know, for budget reasons, you know, herbs and pee, so the first thing is to go. So it's just a real epidemic. I mean, and it's hidden in plain view. But the numbers, and these numbers are pre-recession. These are 2008 numbers. So it's probably more than that. I mean, we opened up, we had three restaurants in Manhattan, and for Thanksgiving restaurants, we opened to work with a few shelters to bring people in. And I was shocked by the people who came in. I mean, you would think it would be the obvious homeless and people like that. No, it's people who are recently out of work and are doing everything they can to keep a roof over their heads, coming in with their kids to get a meal. And it was really heartbreaking because it's not what you normally think. I mean, there's so many problems that we have. Again, when one in eight people are hungry in this country, there's something wrong, and we could fix it. Actually, very soon the child reauthorization vote is coming up, you know, there was a Blanche Lincoln, senator proposed her proposal that she's putting out there for the child reauthorization. The numbers are too little, more in the budget. And so, you know, again, you're finding kids now going into the military are malnourished.
It's interesting, Tom, when you think about my travel schedule. Here I am trying to eat healthy on the road. Forget that. Look what's going on at home. Look what's just going on at home.
Not having enough, you know, to prepare food for your family, it's becoming very, very difficult and costly. Two is subsidies. Something like 90% of all subsidies go for they call industrial crops, corn for high fructose corn syrup, soybeans, things that go into processed foods that keep the processed food artificially low so people can afford it. I mean,
you know what we're going to do?
That's why when you're out of money, you go and eat fast food because it's cheap. You can get a dollar burger. But it's as we know from shows like Supersizes and things like that, it's just hurting us.
Tom Colicchio, of course, from Top Chef. We're going to follow this, Tom. We're going to stay on, see what happens legislatively on this. But, of course, there's a lot of stuff we can do in our own communities. And, of course, just a couple of days from now, Season 7 premiering of Top Chef. Tom, thanks again, man.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
GoRVing.com. With new RVs starting at just $5,000, years of great vacations just got more affordable and convenient. To get started on your road trip dream, visit GoRVing.com. Go affordably. Go RVing.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 18 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Washington Hilton in Washington, D.C. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you can always email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. One other housekeeping note. It's important that you also go onto our website, petergreenberg.com, because we have a comprehensive list of every aid and relief organization now hard at work to helping the people in Haiti and Chile and Western China, and of course, most recently, in the Gulf of our own country, in Mexico, Gulf of Mexico, and of course, down in Louisiana, in Alabama, in Florida, because of the oil leak. So check out that website. It's not just about donating money. It's about donating your time, your energy, and your expertise. So go to the website, check it out. You might be surprised by what you can bring to the party, so to speak. And when you do that, someone came up with a line today that I'm going to use. It's not volunteer vacations anymore. It's not volunteer tourism. It's not even volunteerism. Get ready for this pun, but it's real. It's voluntarism. You got it? Now go help out. Joining us now, a good friend of the show's. In fact, he's been on many, many times, usually from all over the world. The last time I saw him, we'll be very international, was in Beijing, just when we did the show a couple of weeks ago. And he now joins us on the phone, our good friend, the CEO of Virtuoso, Matthew Upchurch. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Peter. How are you? Good to hear you.
Well, other than my voice, I'm doing just great.
No.
You see, it's all that airplane flying, you bet.
That's what I said, exactly.
I know. Well, bottom line is, if you track the trends, and nobody tracks the trends more closely than you do, you'd have to say the travel is coming back.
Yeah, it's obviously, as you know, we primarily focus on the higher end and the luxury sector, which sometimes I can't stand that word because it's not just about luxury, but it's about real experiences We probably went down farther and faster in the beginning, but it's definitely come back very, very strong. We're having double-digit increases across every single category of our products, cruising, hotels, resorts, adventure travel. I mean, it's come back very, very strong.
Well, when you say double-digit, of course, relatively speaking, it had to go up from where it was.
Yeah, it better come back double digits, right?
Exactly. But let's get rid of the word luxury for a second. I'm like you. I think it's a misleading term.
Yeah.
I think people are paying for value now.
Yes, they are. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm almost glad that we talked about this because I was actually talking to, you know, we had our symposium in Mexico City, and we were actually talking. We were fortunate enough to have the president of Mexico come to our meeting, and we were talking to the Secretary of Tourism. And I said, you know, one of the problems that you have when you use the word luxury is that there's this almost automatic, you know, image in your head of Paris Hilton and some obnoxious person, you know, some whatever, the celebrities. But the reality is that it's a sector of the business where people really invest. They're not just on quick packages. These are people that go to destinations, really want an in-depth experience. They really want to integrate themselves with the culture and the people, and they're not just going to an all-inclusive somewhere, sitting there, you know, getting on their charter flight there and back. So it's way beyond, you know, the misnomer of just calling it luxury. And it's, you know, that's why a lot of times we like to call it experiential travel or, you know, the life experience business, because that's really what it's about.
Well, you know, it wasn't that long ago, as you may remember, that not only was luxury a dirty six-letter word, people didn't want to feel that they were going to get punished for having a pedicure while Rome was burning.
Exactly. But so you know what's interesting is that, obviously, I mean, I've been reading, you know, some other luxury goods are fun. You know, they're starting to come back. Obviously, where you and I were in Beijing, my God, I've never seen so many luxury stores in my life. But the reality is that in our sector, I think one of the things that's really interesting about what's happened to travel is that both after 9/11 and even after this financial crisis, hopefully we're not going into a double dip, but as we look at this, people are really sort of, you know, ascertaining, you know, what's important in life. And they may be giving up, you know, on some other things, or they may be cutting back or saying, you know, I don't need to replace that car so soon. But you know what? The time that I spend with my loved ones, with my children, you know, learning, there's no better education than traveling the world and understanding it, especially in the world that our children and our grandchildren are going to live in. It's really important. And so I think that one of the things that I've seen, and I remember talking about this in the mid-90s, I said, you know, we think that people are going to trade goods for experiences. And, you know, I think that a lot of, you know, aging baby boomers like myself, you know, you get to the point where you say, how much more stuff do I need? I mean, I don't need any more stuff. But, you know, being able to, and I heard what you were saying on the program. I mean, you know, the voluntarism and things like that, there's a meaning to all this.
Yeah, I agree. The thing is, though, that people need to get over the hump of realizing that travel is truly a part of our cultural DNA. It's not a question of whether we want to travel or that we have to travel. We need to travel.
Right. Well, and Peter, you just hit on the hot button because, you know, you and I were at the World Travel and Tourism Council meeting in Beijing, and I think that it's even more. I mean, not only is it good for, you know, not only is it good for those that travel from the perspective of the time, you know, I've always talked about one of the great things about travel is that it forces you to get out of the familiar, to be, you know, to look at things from a different perspective and a different angle. It's truly a growth opportunity. It's an opportunity to truly sort of evaluate, have some quiet time, learn things. But also what people forget, and as you know, because you've been such a good friend of the industry, if you were to take 10 people off the streets of any major capital in the world and ask them, what is the largest service industry in the world? You know, I'd be surprised if 2 out of 10 people would say travel and tourism.
Oh, you know what, Matthew, yeah. I think you're high on that number. I think it would be even less.
Yeah, and the reason is because everybody, the problem is that everybody fragments it. They think of the airline industry, they think of the cruise industry, they think of the hospitality industry, they think of, you know, maybe car rentals. But what they don't understand, most people don't understand, because it's such a distributed and yet so vitally connected industry, is that, you know, it's a lot different. I mean, I know, for example, there's a great story I heard from last year's meeting where this young Portuguese guy said, you know, there was a car factory that was going to shut down in Portugal, and there was so much media. It was on the news every night. It was on the front page of the paper over and over and over. And it got to the point where it was so blown out that he went to the university in Lisbon, hired some statisticians and an economist, and found out unequivocally, completely provable, that the people that traveled to Portugal to play golf, just to play golf, in 1 year produced twice as many jobs and twice the GDP contribution to the Portuguese economy than that car factory.
Exactly. And people they can't connect the dots.
Right. And by the way, what other industry in the world, you know, we cannot live in a society and in a world economy. So we're talking about an industry that employs 235 million people. I mean, my gosh, that's not far from the entire population of the United States. That is nearly 10% of the world's GDP. And also, the other question you have to ask yourself is, how can we live in a world where fewer and fewer people actually manufacture what everybody else consumes? I mean, it's just not possible. So travel and tourism is an extremely important, and you know, one of our mutual friends also said something that I thought was a one of those really sticks in your head kind of a story, and that was Costas Chris, who's the chairman of the Tourism for Tomorrow Awards. And one of the other things that's an interesting, there's no question that we as an industry have to keep getting better at being sustainable, at lowering our carbon footprint and all that. But I love what Costas said last year, where he said, you know, I've been an environmentalist, I'm a sustainable expert, I've written for all these publications. He said, but for all of my radical friends, let me propose this theory. What if there was a magical switch on the wall and you could walk over, click it off, and instantly all world tourism would stop dead in its tracks? He goes, I propose to you as an environmentalist that it would be the worst and biggest catastrophic environmental disaster in the history of mankind, because the poverty that would ensue, and what would happen is that how long would it be before the Maasai Mara was farming? How long would it be before the Pantanal was cattle pens? And how long would it be before all the reserves, biospheres, marine parks, and everything that are supported by tourism would be destroyed? I think he has a very good point.
I agree. And on that note, Matthew, we'll hold it right there. But if you want to know more, go to virtuoso.com. And of course, Matthew Upchurch, one of the regulars on our show, at least he's got some good news this week. Travel's coming back with a vengeance and leading the pack, Virtuoso. Matthew, thanks for joining us. When we come back, Washington off the brochure.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here coming to you from the Washington Hilton in Washington, D.C. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. You know, earlier in the show, we were talking to Linda Harper, who's the executive director of cultural tourism here in Washington, about the little-known places that are not in the brochure. Well, here's a place that really is in the brochure. Of course, it's the Capitol, but there's something else. It's the new Capitol Visitor Center. Imagine this. 3 million people this year are going to go through that place, and they've got some very cool exhibits. Before you ever get to the Capitol, it's actually in the center itself, and one of them is called, I love this, I wish I had my voice back, I could really do justice to it, Pirates, Arg, Protests and Public Health. And joining us now, the CEO of the new Capitol Visitor Center, Terry Rouse. Hey, Terry.
Hey.
Hey, let's do that again. Hey.
Hey.
All right, I like that. I'm being welcomed, I can tell. People, I mean, honestly, until I read about the Capitol Visitor Center, I didn't, honestly, I'm telling you this, didn't know you existed.
Well, you know, we opened on December 2nd, 2008, and as of last week, we've seen 3.4 million people in less than a year and a half. So it's there, but we're underground.
See? But now we're talking about it.
Right. We're underground, directly across the street from the Library of Congress and the Supreme Court. Go down the ramp, 580,000 square feet.
And you counted every one of them.
We counted every one of them.
But, you know, if you really want the story or the history of Congress and the U.S. Capitol, you start there.
You start there. And the most important thing about it, we have this tour that people can sign up on our website, visitthecapitol.gov, and it gives you a tour of the historic building. But what we've done is started it off by a film. It's about 13, 14 minutes, gives people a history of the Capitol as a building, but also the history of legislation. Kind of gives you some perspective on what to do. And then you can have this other experience in our almost 20,000 square foot exhibition.
You are
hall.
Much into the square foot stuff, aren't you?
Oh,
you
yeah,
love
really,
this stuff.
Yeah, I love these numbers. The numbers are good. And we have an exhibit right now that a part of it is some historic documents, about 50 rarely seen documents, and it's Pirates, Protests, and Public
Health. Now, the Pirates were talking about the Barbary Coast.
The Barbary Coast, the establishment of the U.S. Navy. Because remember, legislation had to establish all of these things. Protests. This is the one that no one ever guessed. Women's suffrage movement. The fact that women in
Jeanette
the country.
Jeanette Rankin.
That's right. Had to go out and protest and gather votes for women to have the right to vote. And public health, the establishment of things like the food and drug industry, people who protect our food quality, all of that, those documents are there.
My favorite quote from Jeanette Rankin has nothing to do with women's suffrage. It has to do with gun control. You know what she said? Men don't kill men because one person's angry at the other. Men kill men because one of them has a gun.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I always remember that.
Absolutely.
And she's in the
sculpture is in the Emancipation Hall, 20,000 square foot.
Are we back to that 20,000
square foot? We're back to these numbers, yes. It's quite grand, very grand.
But before there was the visitor center, how did people do this stuff?
Well, before there was a visitor center, you sort of had to decide what level of discomfort you were going to have. You had to get in line before 9 and get a ticket, and then come back and get in line 2 or 3 hours and hope it's not raining or snowing or something like that. But Congress has moved to make someplace secure and comfortable. This is it.
Okay, I've got to ask you the devil's advocate question. How many of the 435 members of the U.S. Congress and Senate have actually visited?
I bet you all of them have.
Are you serious?
The Capitol Visitor Center is so well used. I cannot begin to tell you the number of people come through there. Their staff bring constituents there. It is sort of the pride of Capitol Hill right now.
And how much does the tour cost?
Free.
We love that.
Free's good. 6 days a week, 8:30 to 4:30.
And how many square foot? I'm not going to ask. I'm not going there. What's the next exhibit?
Well, after this, we will do another rotation, which I actually don't remember the title of right now, and it starts in October. But there is an exhibit, but we also have within our exhibit hall two virtual theaters that show you how the House works and how the Senate works, and then we have some
permanent
objects.
Wait, stop right now. You're actually going to tell me how Congress works?
We actually tell you how Congress works. Very important. These are two very powerful films that people can see. And when Congress is in session, you can see them live on the floor.
Oh, so you have a camera. You got a Congress cam.
Yeah, we got a Congress. Yes.
You got Congress cam.
There you go.
It's your own version of C-SPAN is what you got.
Yeah, it's fair. It gives people a whole experience about Congress. What's all this business about the law? How did that come together?
What's the biggest surprise, Terry, when people come in there that they didn't know about their own government that you tell them?
That the president doesn't work there.
They actually think he does.
Yes, that's our biggest thing. And to remind people that there's a House, there's a Senate, how it works, that laws are made.
They actually think he goes to work there.
Yes, they do.
Now, of course, you got Joe Biden presiding over the Senate.
Yes, President Pro Tem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really work there either. He works back at his office in the EOB.
When he comes up to officiate, yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Aren't you glad I knew that?
Yes, I'm impressed.
Oh, please. I'm worried about they think that Obama works in the Capitol building.
But we correct that by the time they leave.
Okay. How often who was the president who visited the Capitol building the most?
I really don't know. We have seen the current president quite a bit, but don't know. It's a good question. I'll find out.
I'd like to find that out.
Okay.
Or has a president, because of whatever events were happening, ever slept there?
That's another question. We'll find out.
I want the answers to that.
Okay, we'll get it to you.
Okay, either that or I never pronounce again how many square feet you have in that building. Don't do it. Okay, Terry Rouse, the CEO of the new Capitol Visitor Center, who's going to get me that information, and next week we're going to give it to you. All right, we got a deal. When we come back, we're going to talk to Matt Lombardi. You know who he is? The travel editor for Photos Online Guide. That's right, we're going to Europe. Matt Lombardi, right back after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 43 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Washington Hilton and struggling through my voice, but thank you for bearing with us with me. There are two Matt Lombardis in my life. One Matt Lombardi is the one of the senior producers for the CBS Evening News and a Peabody Award winner. And the other, Matt Lombardi, is joining us today. He's the travel editor for Photos Online Guide of Europe. And what better person to talk to, especially now with the Euro in flux and people trying to figure out where they're going to go with airfares rising in almost stratospheric levels. Am I right, Matt?
Yeah, you are right. It's good to talk to you, Peter.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, we did a thing on the CBS Evening News recently that I did, where we talked about relative price comparisons just on New York to European routes and L.A. to European routes and Chicago to European routes. And on average, Dublin was up 32% over last year. Rome was up 37% over last year. And London, a whopping 42% above last year. So I suppose the good news is with the euro dropping, if you can get there, you're okay. It's how you get there, right?
Well, I think that's exactly right. It just is a matter of you sitting down and looking at your overall budget and realizing that a larger percentage of that budget is probably going to have to go for airfare. But once you're there, you are going to find bargains on the ground.
All right, so let's talk about some of those bargains.
Several years.
Sure, let's talk about some of those bargains that you found out.
Well, I mean, I just kind of across the board, we're finding that hotel occupancy has been weak or relatively weak, and so prices have gone down or stayed the same. I think the driving force as far as that goes is just the fact that the euro is weaker now. And so,
right, exactly.
You know,
and the thing is, you know, airlines
prices have not gone up in a way that would dissipate that benefit at all.
And what's interesting to me is that it's one thing for an airline to park aircraft in the desert. Hotels can't park anything anywhere. They've got to fill those rooms.
That's exactly right. That's true.
So you're seeing hotel occupancy drop anywhere from 12 to 17% as a direct result of airfares going up. It's a very inverse proportion, but it works.
And so, I mean, at the end of the day, this is not a bad time to be going to Europe.
What about going to Europe or going through Europe by train? Because there's so many more options now.
Traveling by train that's always been something that has been a sort of a strong suit for Europe as far as I'm concerned. And trains are getting faster, and so, you know, it's always made sense to travel by train, but it makes more sense with some of the high speed rail that they have now for making longer trips as well. And I mean, also, sure. I mean, flights that are within Europe, from what I've seen, haven't had the same sort of price increases that you're seeing for transatlantic flights.
And the nice thing about the train passes is it's not just Eurail. You can get train passes throughout Europe, even some of the Swiss train lines.
I think that's right. And
it is right. That's why I said it, Matt.
And I certainly have. I know you know what you're talking about with that.
Bottom line is there one country other than Greece, which has been in the news so much, that you would say is the bargain country of Europe this year?
Bargain country of Europe? Boy, I don't know that there's one country that stands out for me. I mean, boy, I don't know. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that? That doesn't. I really don't have any one thing that jumps out for me for that.
Bottom line is you've got Greece because the euro is going down, but it's going down across the board.
Right, yeah. And so, I mean, I think this is a good time for, I mean, you know, there are all sorts of different kinds of experiences you can have in Europe, and because of the united currency, when it goes down in one place, as you're just saying, it goes down.
I will say this, I like Turkey, I like Iceland. I think that if you take a look at the meltdown in their economy, things are now two for one. I like Turkey because I actually look at Turkey as Greece without the attitude.
I certainly, I'm enthusiastic about Turkey too. I have some.
Does that mean you agree with me?
Sure. And also I've actually seen some prices to Iceland that look like they're real bargains. And Iceland's an interesting destination. It's not a place you want to really, I wouldn't build a trip around going to Iceland. But
I would.
Well, that's great.
Matt, I got to cut you off right there. I'm going to leave you in Iceland right now. Travel editor for Fodor's Online Guide to Europe. We'll be back with more right after this. What?
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Washington Hilton in Washington, D.C., taking your calls 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And speaking of that, we got lots of emails to get to. Matt is one, says, I have a question about adventure travel and ecotourism as it relates to sustainability. I'm wondering how you can choose the best tour or travel operator. How do you make sure you will get an authentic experience, but also one that doesn't impact the local communities and the environment as well? Well, actually, Matt, I take another view. You want to make sure it does impact the local communities so that what you do and what you experience and the money that you spend goes back to those local communities, and that those local communities are actively involved in the experience that you have. You know, one of the most overused words is ecotourism. Hotels will tell you that they have wonderful flow control nozzles in their showers, and that makes them eco-friendly. No, that doesn't. That means they're subscribing to municipal codes. They got to go over and above that to get my attention, and they have to go over and above that to get yours. The same thing is this. If they're going to go out on a safari, ask the question of the money I spend, how much goes back to the local community in a way that sustains them and helps them? How much of what you're eating at night was grown locally and goes back to the local providers? How much of what you do in terms of the money that you spend is actually, you know, stays in the country, let alone stays in the community? That's an important thing. If you can't get answers to that, you take a hike. And if you take a hike, you have to answer the same questions because these hiking operators have the same problem. From Cam, emails me, I understand the pilots union is talking strike around the 13th of June. Do you have any knowledge whether this is definitely still in the works? Well, here's the problem, Cam. You just say, I understand the pilots union. Which pilots union? Every pilots union is talking strike right now. You've got the British Airways guys, mostly the flight attendants. You've got Spirit Air pilots. I think that's maybe what you're talking about going on strike. You have the American Airlines flight attendants going to, basically, they've authorized a strike vote. Labor relations and the airlines are not a happy couple these days. Bottom line is this. If you're going on a route where there's not a lot of competition and your pilots go on strike and you're flying on an airline that does not have an interline agreement with another carrier, the odds of you getting there by air, at least on that ticket, are slim and none. So you know what you got to do. What you got to do is do your homework to find out who's competing on that route. And the other competitive airlines have no financial, legal, or moral obligation to honor that ticket easy. So what you need to do, always pay with a credit card. You don't necessarily need travel insurance for that one because if you don't get the service that you contracted for, you can always dispute the charge and get it back. Just start thinking alternate plans of transportation. So you know what? This may be the summer of some labor action. You got to think accordingly. And one from Frank who says, I am a traveler of modest means. I never get a letter from somebody who says, I'm a traveler of unlimited means. So, okay, I'm a traveler of modest means and enjoyed traveling to Yellowstone frequently since 1975. I believe at one time there was an effort to keep a certain proportion of Yellowstone's hotel and lodge accommodations within an affordable range. Well, those days are sort of over in terms of the operated lodges of the big companies. However, Frank, you can get rooms of less than $65 at the Roosevelt Log Cabins in Yellowstone. The Canyon Lodge and Cabins, you'll get them at $70. Mammoth Hot Springs Hotel and Cabins. We did the show from the Mammoth Hot Springs Hotel as little as $87 and up, and the Old Faithful Lodge Cabins at about $66. So there's still some bargains out there. But remember, if you're going over July 4th or during the high season summer months, you're not going to get anything for $65 a night. It just doesn't exist. So plan accordingly. And if you do what I do, which is become a contrarian traveler and think counterintuitively, nothing beats Yellowstone or Yosemite out of season. Fewer crowds, you get to see the place the way that John Muir saw it, and you have a better experience. It's just a no-brainer. The other thing is this, check our website because there are about five different times of the year where the national park entrance fees are waived entirely at all parks that have entrance fees, and that'll save you at least $25 to $35 every time you go. So pick a weekend or a day when the fees are waived and go off season. You'll have a much better experience. One from Jeff, very quickly. Is there a regulation requiring the cruise line when they book your air to inform you in a timely manner of those flights and to extend to you a timetable for any deviations? There's no regulation at all. When you book your air with a cruise line, you're at their mercy. And in fact, they don't even have to book you on a nonstop flight. In many cases, they can take you on a three-stop flight and then you get the opportunity of missing your cruise. So do what I do. If you're going to buy the air from the cruise line, say you'll take care of your hotel room the day before the ship departs from the departing port and make sure they fly you in a day before. Insist on that, because otherwise you'll either miss your ship, your luggage will miss your ship, or you get a twofer, you both miss the ship. All right, so bottom line, go always a day before and be a comparison shopper. As long as you're going a day before, guess what, Jeff? You don't have the cruise line. You don't have to have the cruise line book your airfare at all. Book it yourself. It's a cheaper deal, and at least you know where you're going. But if you book the air either yourself or have the airline or the cruise line book it for you, and you go the day of the cruise or the night before the cruise, you get no sympathy from me. All right, that music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. But for those stations sticking around, we got a whole lot more coming from the Washington Hilton in Washington, D.C. Peter Greenberg here with Peter Greenberg Worldwide. We'll be back with more right after these messages.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.